Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cybersecurity Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by a fellow recruiter, Kyle. How are you doing?
Doing amazing. How are you doing, Tom?
Good. I'm good, mate. We were just chatting away about, I think it's mainly been my fault, mate, but I think that we initially planned this. I think it was this year, wasn't it? Just maybe, or was it last year? It was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, we started planning this about 2 months ago, but some technical difficulties, but now we're here. So I'm very thankful to be here. So thank you, Tom. This is an amazing opportunity and really happy to be here. So thank you so much.
Yeah, good, mate. Good. So I'm looking forward to today, mate. I've been trying to get more recruiters on the show lately because I think with the market conditions, I don't think I know people really value hearing two recruiters chatting away, because I get DMs on LinkedIn, and from the phone conversations I'm having, I know people really like hearing about things from our side of the fence, Kyle. For those people that don't know you, mate, I'll do you a bit of an intro. So Kyle Espinoza started off back in the day, front desk representative for Diamond Elite Sports Academy. You were also a server in a restaurant, which I was imagining would be nice foundational skills for recruiting. You then went on to be a recruiter for ESP Net Consulting. You were there for over 2 years. Then you went on to Alactinet, which was an aerospace and defense recruiter. And you are currently a technical recruiter for Disruptive Solutions, and you've been there for over a year now. Right. Kyle, mate, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you for the intro. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries at all, mate. So I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you? What do you get up to on a day-to-day basis? What's the recruitment world like for you right now, mate?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, I've been in the recruiting industry for a number of years now. I started off my recruiting experience working for my dad's company, which was ESPNet. Got a lot of great foundational skills, really learned how to search, find candidates, really that, you know, that bare basic searching and sourcing. Learned a lot of great things from him as well. Then I transitioned into Actilent, which is in that aerospace and defense realm. Got really into the cleared space, recruiting for pretty much secret and above at that time as well. Like I said, primarily for Boeing's, the Northrop Grumman's of the world. Now I transitioned to more of a technical, not so much specialized. I would say I recruit on the whole cybersecurity realm, with addition to some commercial clients as well. So right now it's primarily in that government space, all cybersecurity focused. With what I do on a day-to-day basis, I try to find the best candidates, get them on the phone, and get them interested in my roles. A lot of the jobs that I do have are supporting a lot of the three-letter agencies like DHS, the DOJ, SEC, the FBI. So a lot of the roles that I have are extremely desirable for a lot of the people that have these clearances, because, you know, to get these clearances, it's tough. It takes a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. Not everyone can get these. So the roles that I have are specifically specialized for a specific specialized group of people. And so I find them to be very desirable for those people who have a clearance. Those are the kind of the day-to-day things that I'm looking for. People with clearances that have worked for these three-letter agencies, like I mentioned, DHS, DOJ. These are all the heavy hitters that we're currently playing in. And finding great candidates for these agencies it's tough, but it's a great place to play. It's a lot of great people. When I talk to outstanding candidates on a day-to-day basis, and it's amazing. It's my favorite part of the job.
Yeah, cool, mate. Cool. No, listen, I know exactly what it's like. I'm just looking across to my right here because we've got all assignments on the board. We don't do security cleared stuff all the time, but we do it, and we've got one on at the minute. And you map the market out, and you're like, God, it's about 200 or 300 people like applicable for this role. So it's like they're always tight searches, but if you've got the network, it makes it a bit easier. But even so, they're still tough searches. But they're good.
The people that do come up to the right people, and they'll appreciate the roles too.
Yeah, they do. And appreciate the roles is a really good way, because it's like when I first started doing it, I was like, God, this one's on site. Is this going to be okay? But they're typically used to like an element of on-site or at least hybrid. So it's not as daunting as you think. But yeah, you certainly need to know the areas. A lot of work around Virginia, a lot of work around DC, a lot of work Oceanside in California. So I know what it's like.
a lot of cleared bubbles here in the United States. You can find good pockets of them. There's some good pockets in Colorado. Virginia, the DC market has a lot of great cleared people. Mm. There's some pockets in Huntsville, Alabama as well. You'll find pockets all throughout the United States, but the DC, Virginia market, that's where you're going to find a lot of the cleared people.
Yeah. Cool. All right, my friend. So what when you're looking for a candidate, Kyle, is there anything in particular you're looking for? Is there any ideal kind of things or ways a candidate acts or what they do or anything that people listening can learn in terms of the ideal profile that a recruiter is after?
Yeah. So the best advice that I could give on this subject is to match your resume to the job description that you're applying to as best as you can. You know, if there's a certain technology that's on that job description that you're extremely interested in pursuing and you don't have that on your resume, put it on there. If there's no point in selling yourself short, a lot of people will use the same resume for the same jobs and they don't typically match up directly with the job description. A lot of recruiters nowadays work with ATS systems, and what these ATS systems do is they scrub keywords and what matches, it gives you a score. If you don't have some of these keywords, your profile could get pushed down to a pile of 200-300 candidates. And just because you didn't put it means that you didn't get seen as well as some others do. So my best recommendation is if you find a role that you're really passionate about and you're really interested in pursuing, take a good look at that. Look at all the different technologies that they have listed. And if you have any experience with any of those technologies, write that. Write a quick sentence or two on the resume itself, describing that detailed experience. I would say the more details that you can have on your resume with the technologies that they're looking for is going to give you the absolute best opportunity and chance for yourself to get in that interview with them. Biggest thing for me, I would say, is just add as much information as you can. The more details are always going to be better.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And I think tailoring the resume and just taking the time, and I've done posts about this and I've said this type of thing on previous podcasts, but I do think it needs saying again. I think so many people out there now, maybe this isn't as applicable to the clears, but the general space, I think people are just blasting resumes out there. They're hardly looking at the job. As an agency, we don't get involved with job adverts at all anymore.
For that reason, you get blasted with 500-600 a day. It's hard to keep up and look at them. It's hard.
You do. I would much rather go through our database, sit down with one of our resources and go, the 40 people I'd like to speak to, please go and get them for me. That is much better use of their time than putting an advert up. But on the flip side, I think if you're a candidate, I think if going back to what you said, if you do tailor your resume for the role, providing you can do those things, then that's great. And if you can provide some personalization on there, you see these posts of people that have applied for, and I think I said this the other week, Carl, but people that have applied for 400-500 jobs. And I think if you really tailored your resume properly, sat down, followed up with a hiring manager on LinkedIn, I think this tailoring things and personalization in this age of AI and automation, I think it's just going further and further, isn't it?
Yeah, ChatGPT is right there. It could be your best friend. Hey, look at my resume. How can I make this better? It can help you make it sound more technical, make it sound less technical. If you want to add more personalization to it, ChatGPT is an extremely advanced technology that is we could use to our benefit. I use it on a daily basis as a recruiter. I use it to help me with my searches and things of that nature. So why not have it with help your resume? It's there to help anything that you can get help from with resume, building it, editing it, make it sound better, that's always going to be a great addition for you.
Yeah, cool, mate. All right, buddy. On the resume formatting conversation, I always think you can ask different people. I always say you can ask 10 different people and get 4 or 5 different answers. And it's really common. No one really knows. What are your thoughts, mate, as an experienced recruiter in the market? What do you like to see on the resume? What don't you like to see on the resume? How should it be formatting if I'm applying for a job with you?
Yeah. For sure. The best resumes that I've seen follow a typical suit of format, right? It has that general information, their name, email, LinkedIn. Having LinkedIn's great as well. So you get another form of identification. You can see a face to the resume. That's always great. After that, I would put your education. You got a bachelor's, master's, PhD. You want that to be on the forefront. You want to show that you've been committed to a university. You've learned a lot. That's extremely important. Any relevant certifications that you have for the role, that should be at the top too. Just so those are things that recruiters, employers, they'll see those and be like, hit, I like that. I like that. Just checks boxes off the bat. Following that, I would say put your experience from what's most recent to, what's least recent. And, going along with that, if you're applying to, let's say, like a data engineering role or some kind of cyber role, and you worked at a grocery store 7-8 years ago, that information, that part of your resume may not be so relevant. You probably don't need that on there. A lot of the times as a recruiter, when we send your resume over to the particular employer, client, whatever it may be, we only keep the relevant stuff in there anyways, because we want to show that you are capable of doing the job that you are being hired to do. Your store clerk experience may not be super relevant, although it's great experience, not to say it's not bad experience at all. It's just not as relevant for these roles. To have it nice and concise in a very clear manner, this is what I do and this is where I want to be. I'm a fit for your job because of this. That's what you want to be extrapolating out of your resume. Below that is you can add anything. Achievements, hobbies, what else do people add? References, any kind of information, your skills, maybe like a little box with all the skills that you've done in one little area, just so that way they can see that too. That's all great stuff. Anything after the experience, it's whatever you like. As long as it's not over 4 to 5 pages, I would say it's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, no, cool, mate, definitely. And I had Tina, she runs the talent acquisition for Palo Alto, on the other day, Carl, and she was going, oh yeah, I don't want to sound harsh, but I think recruiters only look at a resume for about 10 seconds. And straight away I thought, that's probably generous. Like,
that's generous. I would say 5 to 7.
I Googled it, it's 6 to 7. So
yeah.
You're absolutely spot on. So yeah, if there's stuff on there that's, it's not going to be advantageous at all. So yeah, then get it off. Reverse chronological order, like you say, get the most recent things at the top. The LinkedIn one is, we pushed over a bit, but that is just absolutely
so important.
Oh, it's huge. I've got clients before that Hub Repo isn't really good, and there's no online presence or social media presence. They're like significantly less interested. And I've had it before as well, Kyle. I had one client in New York where it was ages ago and there was loads of recruiters recruiting for them, and I was representing one candidate and he really wanted the job and he was good and I knew he was good, but they just weren't coming back to us. Mm. And he had stuff online of him hacking a web app in a simulated environment. So we basically put this film together, sent it in. We sent his resume back in. He had a YouTube channel. We sent his YouTube channel in. Okay. And literally, bang, they came back. He got the interview. And genuinely, I promise you, he got the job. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, so it was like, I was like, that is the power of having stuff out there that is above and beyond just a resume. I think it gives you an edge when it comes to progression, standing out, additional opportunities, getting a job in the first place. It's just endless, isn't it?
100%. Like you're saying, the more forms that you can prove yourself that you can do what you need to do, that's amazing. GitHubs, YouTubes, like I said, certifications, projects, all these things are just conglomerate of, you know, educating yourself, making yourself better. Shows that you're a hard worker, they're willing to improve too. It just shows so much that to yourself and what you can do. It just speaks on who you are and what kind of an employee you can be potentially to this firm as well. It just helps in so many different aspects.
It does, mate. It just gives people like a real into you, and it lets people feel like they know you before they do. It helps others. It's just, yeah, it's just really, it really does. I know from doing the stuff on social media myself, it really helps when you reach out to people, even if it's cold. Sometimes they're like, oh yeah, hi mate. How you doing? Seeing you around. It's like, oh God, wow. I was expecting you to have a go at me for doing a bit of cold outreach, but you're being really nice. This is strange. So like, it works really well. All right, mate. Cool. When it comes to interviews, have you got any kind of general advice, people listening, or tips or hints or do's and don'ts when you're in an interview, mate?
Of course. Yeah. In an interview is the biggest part of getting a job, right? That is where you make or break it, right? So the biggest things, the tips that I can give is be yourself. If you are really passionate about the job that you are pursuing, be passionate. Don't be nervous at all. That's the biggest thing that I can give. There's no point of being nervous. This is your bread and butter. This is the thing that you're enjoying and you want to do that you love. Show them that you love it, that you are passionate. And I have zero doubts in anyone that interviews with their passion, with their enthusiasm, they're going to get the job 10 times out of 10, because that's what employers want to see. They want to see potential candidates and employees of their company. They want people who are go-getters. They want passion and enthusiasm. If you go into the interview and you're quiet and cold and shy, they may look at you and say, that might not be the best culture fit for us. You may be the smartest person in the world, but you know what? Hey, this person may not gel with this person because they might butt heads. Those are the soft skills that are untalked about in interviews. They are so important, because you could be the most technically sound person, but if the interview doesn't go well, the people aren't going to hire you just because of that. So be yourself, be enthusiastic, be passionate. Don't be nervous, because there's no point of being nervous. This is your next step in your next career. That's how every interview should be looked at. Hey, this is the next place I'm going to work. Let me be excited. Those are the biggest things that I say. And the candidates that have gotten jobs for me, they're the most enthusiastic ones, who are happy and passionate and are just really excited about the opportunity. That's my best advice. Be detailed with your answers too. You know, that all goes hand in hand. Details, enthusiasm. You will never not get the job if you have those two things.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, thanks, mate. You talk about detail and being passionate. And I was saying recently, if everyone before an interview just spent, I was going to say 20 minutes, but even if people just spent 10 intensive minutes on their own in a room. So if I was coming for an interview with you and I read as much as I could read about you in 5 minutes and as much as I could read about the company online in 5 minutes, and I just sat in a room on my own and then went on to the interview, I'd probably be way more prepared than most. And it doesn't sound like much because so many people don't. I actually used to say 20. I mean, I think if you did 20 minutes, you'd absolutely nail it.
It's like a study guide. You go to the website and you pick out one thing that you're interested in. You bring that up to the interview. They go, wow, they're super interested in us. They took some time and looked at our website. Yeah. Not a lot of people do that. And it goes an extremely long ways in the eyes of the interviewers just to show how enthusiastic and how excited you are. Because that just shows that.
Yeah, it does, mate. It does. And I think if you've like really, say if you've read for 15, 20 minutes about the company, I think just crowbar something into the conversation about something that was maybe on page 5 or 6 to actually show that you've really gone to town and you are genuinely, if you are interested and you have prepared and you do care and you are right for the job and you did personalize your and tailor your resume for the role correctly, and just show off that you've actually, that you literally care, because let's say so many people probably don't. And all this stuff that we're talking about, it just puts you in like the top percent or 0.5%, because you know what it's like, Kyle. You can speak to some people and you're just like, I can't believe how little you are. I can't believe you've come on in that way, or how can I put you forward when you're like that? And it's, you just, you're trying to help, but you know that sometimes there's so much that's just not getting, I don't know, maybe people just don't even think about it. I don't know,
it's tough. I think nervousness is a big thing. A lot of people, especially with the tech industry, they don't have a lot of interaction with a lot of people. Talking with recruiters may be a little bit, I'm speaking more on the junior to mid level candidates. You know, the senior level people obviously have had recruiter conversations, lots of interviews, so they're fine. They get it. You know, the junior, the middle people, they don't have a lot of conversations with recruiters like us. They don't have a lot of interviews. They get a little nervous. I get that. Totally understand. Mm-hmm. Like I said, though, the easiest thing to get away from that is just to sit down and say, hey, this is what I'm passionate about. I'm excited for this. I love doing this. I'm gonna do great. With that kind of confidence, you're always going to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, mate. I think as well, when you're talking of nervousness, if you prepare really well, I think it gives you an air of confidence. Like if you've gone in there and you're ready, you're on point, I think it shows in your body language, the way you are, the way you stand. So I think even if it's just to give you that internal boost inside, like that is enough reason to prepare alone.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I guarantee. Yeah. Preparing is the best thing you could possibly do in any scenario, in any point in time, and at anything.
No, cool. But in terms of questions, have you, should I ask questions during, at the end? How should it go down with regard to questions, mate?
Definitely. I would say at the end, when they say, hey, do you have any questions for us? I would say that is the employer saying, hey, what else would you like to know about us? Typically, saying any kind of question is the best. You know, what can you tell me more about the program? Tell me more about the job. Tell me about the people, the culture, the company. What fun things do you guys do? Like quarterly, do you guys have any events? My favorite question, though, I tell every one of my candidates after the interview, hey, ask them, hey, what is your favorite part about this company? Because that gets the employer or the interviewer thinking about all the positive things that they love about the company, and thus leaves the interview with a lasting impression that you did a great job, because all that positivity is floating in their head. And they're like, wow, that Kyle guy, he had a great interview. You may not have had the best interview, but you, just because you left it on such a great note, you left them with all the positive things that they love about the company, just gives that last cherry on top to the interview. That is my favorite question.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, no, thanks, mate. And I think, yeah, definitely have questions prepared. I've never, ever met a client that views questions negatively.
Oh, they love that.
Yeah, they really like a lot of questions. It shows that you're interested. It shows you're caring. And I think the more you can think about the questions as well, the better, Kyle. Like the more authentic and genuine they are. Have you heard of Rec to Rec before? I don't know if it's a thing. It's recruiters that recruit recruiters.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we use one, because I was like, if any recruiters are coming on, I want them to be exceptional. I don't want anyone liaising with our clients. So we're using a rec to rec at the minute. And like some of them, I've asked them questions and have you got any questions? And I can just tell they're just asking me questions because they should. Do you know what I mean? They just know they should.
So I think,
maybe it's because I'm a recruiter. Maybe it's a bit harder. But I think the more genuine, the more thought you can give those questions. And look, ask questions to make sure it's a right move for you as well. Because any move you make wants to be long term. You want to be happy. You want to be genuinely sticking around and want to stick around for years on end. As nice as it is to talk to guys like me and you, you don't want to be doing it every year. You want to be probably doing it every 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah. Every year would be tiresome.
It would, yeah. It'd be stressful.
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Cool, mate. Cool. In terms of interviews you've done over the years that are quite memorable or have been really good, is there any you can tell us about? And is there any things that he or she did in that interview that the listeners could learn from, mate?
Yeah. So for me, as a recruiter, I speak to people on a daily basis, right? A lot of people look at me like a robot. I am Disruptive Solutions. I am robot. However, I'm a human being, right? Some of the best conversations that I have had throughout my career are the people that treat me like a human. They speak to me like Kyle Espinoza, not Disruptive Solutions recruiter. You know, being treated like a human being on the phone with someone that you've never met is a completely different experience than just being the recruiter guy, right? I love talking about what people are doing over the weekend, what kind of giant barbecue they're having, who they're having over to the Labor Day barbecue, what are they doing at the pool with their kids. Those are the kind of conversations that I remember that stick out to me because I get to learn more about who this person is behind the job, behind the closed door. These are the ones that are memorable, right? Like the ones that you just connect with people on a genuine level rather than just, hey, this is the job. Are you a fit? Bye. Those are the ones that's just transactional, right? A lot of the stuff in our space is transactional. But when you get that little touch of human element where you get to speak about something else, like I said, barbecues, family gatherings, Christmas, stuff like that, that's what makes me happy. And that's what really sticks out to me when I talk to people personally.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And I think as well, I think the further people want to progress in the career, the more of that they need to have.
Yeah.
I've always noticed I worked a VP role recently, and any senior role, I'm like, God, all these candidates are so nice.
Yeah.
Like, they're all so good with me. And I'm like, no wonder they've all progressed to VP level because they're all just so nice. Like, I think in the corporate world, you can't, if you're just not a very nice person and you're hard to get on with and you're not personable and you don't make the time and the effort to listen to other people, I think the chances of you progressing are significantly less. So, and also as well, Carl, the security space is so small. Everything comes back round. You end up talking to the same people again. If someone's not a fit for this, they're often a fit for that. Things come back round, mate, don't they?
Yeah.
So... yeah. Okay, mate. Cool. Brings us on nicely to communication. If I am listening and I'm thinking I need to get my communication better, it's not quite where it is at the minute. Any tips or hints for refining those communication skills, buddy?
Yeah. Communication, anything you do in life always gets better with practice, right? How can you get communication skills better? Talk more. Have more conversations with people. Go out of your comfort zone. Maybe schedule 20, maybe 15 minutes with a coworker of yours that you really like. You want to just do a little quick working session or bounce some ideas off each other. Just get conversation flowing. Maybe you have a 30-minute meeting with your manager just to see how you're doing or what you can do better. Just conversations, having more conversations throughout the day, getting out of your comfort zone. That's going to put you in an opportunity. So that way, when you're 5, 10 years down the line, you've had all types of conversations. What situations prompt for this? Just practicing. Practice always makes perfect. And by refining your listening, talking skills is how you're going to eventually make it to that C-suite level. You got to be able to hone your conversations, your communication. And that only happens by practicing, right? You got to be able to talk more, get out there, and just have conversations with people. And you'll find it's very easy. Once you get started, it's very easy.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. It's if people go back to the first time they hacked a web app or the first time they worked in a SOC or whatever it might be, it was probably really difficult. They probably weren't that good at it. And you've got to push yourself to do these things again. But I think as well, it's really easy to lose. Like I notice if I go on holiday, go on vacation for a bit, you come back and your first client call or first candidate call, you're all over the place. You can't remember what to say. It's rubbish. You sound like you just started again. And then by the end of the first day, you're back to normal. But I think if you're not exercising that muscle on a frequent basis of talking to people and putting yourself out there and making yourself feel uncomfortable, I know for a fact it's really easy to go a little bit within yourself, because I'm used to talking all the time. And if I have a week off it, I feel like I'm brand new again and I'm starting all over again. So if you always say doing code review or always hacking and never really talking, I can imagine that it must get really hard.
Yeah, exactly. No, like exactly what you're saying. You got to keep working that muscle. And if you're always hacking or always coding, there's not a lot of time to be communicating and working on that muscle. So you just got to find time and just small opportunities to just have conversations with people. It could be as easy as, hey, do you want to go get some lunch? Lunch is a great way to open conversation, build relationships with others. And once you start that relationship, like you said, working in a sock, working vulnerability stuff is hard when you start. But once you get the hang of it, it becomes second nature, it becomes easy. People like us, we talk to 50, 60 people in a month. We maybe more at sometimes. We're used to it. There's other muscles that we need to work, but communication for us is easy because we have these conversations on a daily basis, all the time with very different people. So that more conversation you can have, I would say, is just going to make your communication skills a lot better.
Yeah, definitely, mate. In terms of mistakes and where people have gone wrong, where do you see most people going wrong when it comes to applying or interviews or the job market in general, mate?
Yeah, I know we touched on a few of these already. It goes along with the tailoring your resume. Just having one plain resume, it's tough to find a job when you're trying to find something very specific and you use a general resume. So that's mistake number one, tailor that resume. Two, I think we touched on this as well. Details matter. Employers want to hear details of your role, details of the technology you worked with, details on literally anything they may ask you. The more details you can provide, the better. The people that give small, short, answers that just don't answer much, they're like, okay, that was okay. You want to blow them out of the water. Do the best you can to blow them out of the water. My final thing that I would say is show up on time, early, and don't miss the interview. Because a lot of the time, if you miss the interview, that is a bad impression, whether it be technical issues or whatever it may be, no matter if it's your fault or not, the employer is going to look at that as a little X on the box. It's not the best thing. So always make sure if you have an interview scheduled to be prepared, be on time, and don't have anything surrounding that, because it's extremely important to join that when it's time, because you don't want to miss that.
No, yeah, definitely, mate. And I see it on, we've got a new job description through from a client. It was in the middle of the night last night because UK and they're in the US. But it was a massive thing on punctuality and lateness. And I've met the founder and I know what he's like. And he does just no faffing around with him whatsoever. Really? So, yeah, it's a big thing. I just wonder, Kai, sometimes I wonder if there's like almost like too much choice. It's just almost too easy to apply these days. If there was just like, say, 50 companies available to me and 50 companies available to you, can you imagine how much detail and how much tailoring and how much effort we'd put in? Whereas you can log online now and see 100 jobs, and LinkedIn algorithm pushes jobs towards you. But it's almost like you think you're doing more, but you're probably doing less. And I always say this phrase on the podcast, but I would like to say it again, which is slow down to speed up. If you just got 10 companies and 3 or 4 key decision makers out of each of those 10 companies, that's 40 people. If you hit them up really tailored, really personalized, I think you'd get better results than applying for 500 jobs, copy and pasting.
Yeah. And something you brought up a great point actually there. If you're someone and there's 10 companies that you love to work for and you'd be a great fit, what I would do is I would get my resume perfectly done up for each company. I would then go to LinkedIn and reach out to some of the recruiters, reach out to some of the executives, get your name and your likeness out there in that space. Then a recruiter's going to be like, hey, have you heard of Kyle Espinoza? Oh, that guy messaged me on LinkedIn 2 days ago. Let's get an interview for him. Small things like that can add up. And if you just find 10 that you really like and really make an effort for those 10, I guarantee you will get at least 2 to 3 interviews of that 10 instead of just blasting and hoping and praying. Hoping and praying can only take you so far. It's what you can control is what you can control. You can control your resume. You can control where you post. You can control who you reach out to. There are so many things in your control that people aren't controlling, and it's not using it to their advantage. So do what you can control what you can control, and do your best like you said, slow down to speed up. That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, definitely. I almost take it back to the old school. If you say live in Virginia and you pick 20 companies in Virginia that you really want to work for, I would imagine they're probably going to be going to an event or a B-sides, or they're going to be attending something in your area at some point. So not only can you tailor all the communication, you can research each company in detail and show that you actually care. You make sure it's the right firm for you. Make sure you're going to do a good job for them and they're going to give you what you want. And yet, if they're local, you know, that in-person stuff, like I've been talking to the team today about it, Carl. I'm going to start booking some flights and getting over to America a lot more, because I think that it's almost like a USP these days to go and buy someone dinner or go and take someone for a beer or go and take someone for a coffee, because since COVID, we don't need to do it. So it's almost, if you say to, I met one of my clients from Miami, she was in Spain. So I met her down in Spain and a few of the team, and it was absolutely, I wasn't going to go. And they were like, Tom, we're from like Miami and we're over here. Like, you can't not jump on a plane 2 hours down to Spain. I was like, okay, fair enough. So it's, but it made all the difference, mate. And it was so good. I almost feel like all this, I love automation and AI, and we're using it for all sorts within the agency. And it's great as long as you don't overuse it. But I do think with it all coming in, there's a place for just going back to the old school and meeting up and shaking hands and buying beers and buying coffees. I think it goes a long way, mate, doesn't it?
Yeah, back to basics. That is the human element I touched on. You can do all this automation, you can play with robots, but above all else, we're all human beings, and human beings love human interaction. That is what's really going to set the stage for the relationship that you want to build with this person. And it just goes an extremely long way. Like you said, that your client, they wanted to see you. They told you that you're not going to Spain.
That's right.
Exactly. But that means that you're doing a great job and they really wanted to meet you. So that is amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah. And you know what? It's nice, because even though I'd been dealing with them for years, it just felt so much different after we ping each other all the time on LinkedIn and messages apps and all the rest of it, but to actually have met someone, it's just a different level of rapport and trust and a different level of relationship, like I say. And I think just that pure effort of actually getting on a plane and traveling and going to meet someone, it really counts for a
lot of my clients right now. I live about 30 minutes away from DC. I get to take the metro or the train into DC, meet my people for lunch all the time. It's great. Like it's an experience that you feel, makes you feel great. You're putting in this work to see this person, to build this relationship, and it just makes you feel great. Honestly, for me, I love it. It's my favorite thing.
No, I think it's great, man. I think, like you say, it's COVID got us in that temporary thing where we're all like, we don't need to do all that anymore, and we're all remote. And I think at one point I was like, and we are remote. We are a remote business, but I am leaning more and more into let's take it back to the old school. Let's go and Let's go and meet up. Maybe I'll be flying over to see you sooner than you think, Carl. Might just be knocking on your door one morning, mate.
Oh, yeah. Let me know when you're in town.
Cool. All right, mate. I used to say book, favorite book that you've read, but it can be book or podcast or online content. It doesn't have to be cybersecurity related. It doesn't have to be recruitment related, although it can be. Just anything that's had impact on you as a person and your overall growth, like what books, pods, or what are you consuming online, mate, that could help the listeners?
Yeah. So I will actually go back to the basics. I'm going to go old school. So I read this book this year. It's called Emotional Intelligence Habits by Travis Bradbury. This book has taught me how to communicate in any situation with any individual. This book has made me an overall better human being than any other book that I've read. This book talks about a lot of things that are very beneficial to you in the workplace, to you as a person. Some of the chapters that are in here are how to beat stress and stay calm, how to increase your happiness, increase your confidence, increase your mental strength. What's the difference between introverted and extroverted people, and how do you communicate with these people? Because they're very different people. And that was a chapter that really opened my eyes the most, because I'm an extrovert. I love talking. But I didn't realize how different introverted people are. And this book teaches you how to navigate those conversations and these relationships to better make yourself a better human being. So this book, it is a little bit of a textbook. It's about 450 pages, but I read this in about 3 months. And the takeaways from this book have ever changed me. I look at my notes on a daily basis, refresh my memory. I'm like, I'm having a bad day. Let me go through the mental toughness notes that I read. Hey, I need to get some confidence for this next meeting. Let me go back to my notes. And there's quotes in there. There's stories that teach you this is what someone's did and this is how they became successful. Or this is something that's out there and this is how you should react to something like that. It just gives very situational world examples where you get to understand and really relate to yourself. Like, oh, wow, I never thought of that. I should probably start doing that. That's what makes me a better person, learning and reading and trying to figure out what can I do? What can I say? How can I bring, what can I do to myself to make me a better person? And this book has taught me that.
Yeah, wicked, man. Books like that are, I just think that they're invaluable. There's some I read a book called, it wasn't that one, but it was called Emotional Intelligence. And it was loads of stuff. You hit the nail on the head when you said just being a better human being. It's good. And so much of that stuff, I don't know if you thought, when I've read through books like that, I've thought, like, so many people that I know probably should read this book because so many people don't know how to act and how to treat people, and they don't quite understand why a certain person is behaving that way, or perhaps why they're getting a bit defensive, or if they're getting upset and they're treating them how they don't. There's always a reason behind these things and why people do different things. And I think these books really unpack and uncover
That's a great read. Yep. Yeah, unpack and uncover. That's exactly what it does. It helps you. It brings things that you didn't think about previously to the forefront of your mind. And it makes you think, okay, I do that. I should probably stop doing that. It makes you realize things you never realized before. And it changes you. It really does change you.
Yeah, cool. Man. I'm going to, Kyle, I'm literally asking for my own, because I'm like, I really want to read that book. I don't know when I'm going to have time. I'm literally asking for me, but I'm sure it helps some of the listeners. Is there any other snippets of information you can give us out of that book that can help people straight away?
Oh, man. Let me see.
I
don't have anything off the top of my head. It's just book is chock full of great information. It just teaches you how to be confident, how to be better. This is a study guide on how to be an exceptional human being. And I know I keep saying human being because at the molecular level, that's what we are. We're meant to love. We're meant to care for. We're meant to be genuine, authentic, and caring. This book teaches you that, and it helps you rewire your mind to get to that level again, because everyone starts that way. Whatever you go through in your life, that's what changes you, and that's what changes your perspective. And this book gets you back to that wholesomeness that everyone should be at, and that's how everyone should treat each other too. They do have a golden rule. I will say this is the one thing I do remember. Okay. The golden rule of this book is to treat others the way that you want to be treated. Yeah, it is very simple. You've heard it your whole life, but at the very simplest form, always treat people the way you want to be treated. If you don't want to be yelled at, don't yell at people. If you want people to be on time, don't show up late. It's just small things like that. You do things that you, if you want to be treated a certain way, you should act that way too. Don't be a hypocrite. You want to do the things that you feel like are going to make you a better person. That's what this book teaches you.
Yeah, no, wicked, mate. Thanks. And what we'll do for everyone listening is we'll get that book in the show notes, and then people can access it and find it easy. But yeah, all right, Carl, nice. I suppose really as we come to the end here, just, and again, this might be a tricky one to answer, but any, and I know we've talked about some of it, but have you got any advice or anything for people on the market now, or any other hints or tips or anything else people can be doing? I know there's pockets of the market that are still really busy, but there's certain people on the market that are clearly struggling. I've noticed just certain messages I've got off LinkedIn, and people are just, I think sometimes the frustration's getting taken out of recruiters a little bit. I can sense some people are just annoyed. Any tips for people out there that are struggling, mate?
So I think when we bring this question up, we're talking about more of those junior out of college folks. Cause I have a lot of buddies. I've talked to a ton of great graduated candidates that can't find anything. And it's really tough out there for these people. There's a lot of people that just graduated that don't have a lot of experience that want a great job. And unfortunately, they're getting beat out because of that. The best thing I could say for junior and mid-level people that are having trouble finding a job, continue to learn, do boot camps, get certified, keep learning. If you keep getting certifications and you keep learning, someone will inevitably take a risk on you. That's just the truth. If you just have your resume out there, you haven't changed in a year, you haven't been updating anything, it gets stale. You got to show that you are able to continue to learn, persevere. You know, don't get frustrated, because someone will take a chance on you if you put in the work. It is very competitive right now, and it's hard for me to say, but you have to just keep working hard. You cannot give up. that the worst thing you could do is just give up and keep applying and just shooting your resume out in Indeed. That's the worst thing you could do. Keep learning, keep updating that resume, and someone will find you.
Yeah. No, thanks, Kyle. I think that's a nice place to end, mate. It's basically just not doing what everyone else is doing. Not exactly. Everyone's doing a course. Not everyone's upskilling. Not everyone's, you know, getting hyper-personalized with their messaging. Not everyone's tailoring their resume. So it's just doing all these things on a consistent basis that will make you stand out. But yeah, thank you, mate. I'm glad that we got there in the end, mate, and we've got got this episode. Dude. It's been nice, mate. But I think we've about nailed it, mate, don't you? I think we've done okay.
I think we're doing great. I loved it.
Yeah, cool, mate. All right, mate. Thank you, mate. Really nice to catch you up. Nice to see you. And some good points in there for the listeners. So thank you for that as well, buddy. We'll see you soon.
If you're ever in the United States in the DC area, let me know, please. I'd love to take you out to lunch, or dinner, something like that. Like, I, for real, this has been a great experience for me. I've had a wonderful time talking to you. So definitely 10 out of 10. I'm super excited to listen too.
Yeah, good, mate. Listen, we'll get it released soon. And Kyle, thanks for your time, mate. And we'll speak again soon, buddy.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, mate.